The money comes forward in envelopes and cashier's checks. Hands shake, voices pray. The promise is simple and spoken without hesitation. Give once, wait 17 months. God will double it. The church is full. Testimonies echo from the stage. People say it worked for them. They say faith unlocked it. Pastors nod. Ushers move fast. No contracts, no fine print. Just belief, obedience, and time. Across the country, the same words spread through sanctuaries and living rooms. Retirements are emptied. College funds are handed over. Home equity becomes a seed. The language is careful. This is not an investment. It is a gift to God. Doubt is framed as weakness. Questions sound like sin. The money piles up faster than it can ever be returned. 400 million, maybe more. No one sees numbers. They see blessings coming due. Then the waiting stretches. Checks do not arrive. Phones stop ringing. Faith collides with math. Chapter 1. The promise that could not fail. The sanctuary is full before the doors officially open. Folding chairs line the walls. People stand in the aisles. Some hold envelopes tight against their chests. Others grip cashier's checks folded into Bibles. The air is warm, thick with expectation. On stage, leaders from Greater Ministries International speak with calm certainty. Their voices carry confidence, not urgency. They repeat the same sentence everyone has come to hear. Give once, wait 17 months, God will double it. They are careful with language. This is not an investment. It is not a loan. It is a gift, a faith gift. God is the one who repays. The ministry only facilitates obedience. The crowd listens closely. Heads nod. Some whisper prayers under their breath. Testimonies follow. A man says he gave $10,000 and received $20,000 back. A woman says she paid off her debts. Another says God honored her sacrifice when nothing else worked. Each story lands hard. Applause rises. Doubt shrinks. The promise is framed as scripture in action. Leaders cite biblical principles of sowing and reaping. They say God rewards faith that costs something. They say fear blocks blessing. They say this ministry exists to help believers step fully into trust. There are no contracts handed out, no prospectuses, no risk disclosures. People are told paperwork would cheapen the act. Faith should not need signatures. Ushers move through the room with baskets. Envelopes disappear quickly. Checks are stacked neatly. Names are recorded. Dates are logged. Each giver is told when their return will arrive. 17 months. No sooner, no later. For many in the room, the decision feels overdue. They have tried other paths. Savings accounts earn almost nothing. Pensions feel uncertain. Jobs come and go. This promise feels clean, simple, God-backed. The origins of the ministry are described as humble and divinely guided. Leaders say the idea came through prayer and revelation. God, they explain, showed them a system that would bless his people while advancing his work. The ministry would collect faith gifts. After 17 months, gifts would be doubled using funds from later givers. They do not explain it that way. They say God multiplies. Early participants did receive money back. That truth spreads fast. Checks arrived on time. The amounts were exactly double. People talk, churches talk, family members talk. What worked once feels safe again. Word travels through church networks first. Pastors mention it from pulpits. Small group leaders share quiet recommendations. Friends call friends. They speak in careful tones. This is not for everyone, only those ready to trust fully. Money flows in waves, thousands at a time, tens of thousands, sometimes more. The ministry grows quickly. Office space expands, staff increases, mail pours in from other states. The promise remains unchanged, 17 months. Leadership insists everything is transparent. They say records are kept. They say prayer covers the rest. When questions arise, answers return to faith. God does not need explanations. Testing him invites delay. People believe because belief feels safer than skepticism. To doubt feels like doubting God himself. The ministry does not demand silence, but it rewards agreement. Those who ask fewer questions are praised as spiritually mature. Inside the organization, money moves constantly. Deposits arrive daily. Checks go out weekly. Timing matters. The flow must stay strong. Leaders speak often about momentum, about unity, about not allowing negativity to disrupt the blessing cycle. The structure depends on one thing continuing without interruption. New money must always exceed old obligations. As long as giving grows, returns can be paid. As long as returns are paid, belief holds. No one in the pews sees this math. They see testimonies. They see smiling leaders. They see neighbors who already receive checks. They see proof. Some givers take extreme steps. Retirement accounts are cashed out. Home equity is borrowed against. College funds are reassigned. They justify it with scripture and urgency. God will replace it and more. Families argue quietly. Spouses disagree. Parents warn adult children. But success stories drown out concern. The ministry encourages peace over conflict. Division is framed as spiritual attack. Leadership stresses patience. 17 months is fixed. No early withdrawals, no exceptions. Faith must be complete to be rewarded. As the months pass, the scale becomes enormous. Money enters from across the country. Churches in multiple states host presentations. The message remains consistent. God doubles obedient faith. Behind the scenes, the obligations grow heavier. Each month adds another layer of future payouts. The timeline stacks. What was once manageable tightens. The ministry does not slow intake. It accelerates. Leaders say God is opening doors. They say the harvest is ready. Expansion feels righteous. There is no reserve, no external revenue. The system feeds itself. Every promise rests on future gifts. Most participants never consider this. They trust the ministry. They trust God. They trust the testimonies that sound just like their own hopes. The first cracks appear quietly. Some payouts arrive late. Leaders say delays are spiritual tests. Faith must be refined. Those waiting are encouraged to pray harder. Most accept this explanation. 17 months becomes flexible in conversation, though never officially. Patience is praised publicly. Complaints are discouraged privately. The money still comes in faster than it goes out. For now, the promise stands. The room fills again. Envelopes are passed forward. The system keeps moving. The amount owed grows larger every day. Chapter 2. When the math breaks faith. The expansion happens fast enough to feel unstoppable. What began inside a few Florida churches now stretches across state lines. Conferences are booked, guest speakers travel, letters are mailed to addresses pulled from church directories and personal referrals. The language never changes. This is not an investment. This is obedience. Congregations in other states hear the same testimonies. Pastors stand aside and allow ministry representatives to speak. They present calm confidence. They show copies of cleared checks. They explain the timing again. 17 months, no deviation. Money accelerates. The volume no longer fits inside weekend services alone. Contributions arrive through the mail in padded envelopes. Overnight deliveries stack up in offices. Clerks log names and amounts all day. Deposits are made constantly. Leadership speaks of stewardship. They talk about order. They say God is not the author of confusion. They encourage believers to ignore outside voices. Those voices, they say, do not understand faith. The first serious strain appears in timing. A small group of early participants reaches the end of their 17 months and nothing arrives. They call, they write, they are told to wait. A few days becomes weeks. Weeks stretch longer. Explanations stay spiritual. God is testing patience. God is purifying motives. God is aligning the blessing with His will. Some accept this without resistance. Others grow uneasy. They begin to ask practical questions. They want to know where the money is kept. They want to know how returns are calculated. The answers are vague. Faith should not need spreadsheets. Inside the organization, pressure sharpens. Each delayed payment increases tension. Every week adds new obligations. The system now owes more than it holds. The only solution is growth. Leadership pushes expansion harder. Presentations become more frequent. Urgency creeps into language. Opportunities are framed as limited. Doors are said to be closing soon. At the same time, whispers reach outside ears. A few pastors quietly pull away. A few participants contact state offices asking if the program is legal. They are unsure how to describe it. It is not an investment, it is a gift, but money is promised back. Regulators begin to notice patterns. Complaints arrive from different states with the same description. Same timing, same promise, same delays. Agencies start comparing notes. Investigators do not speak the language of faith. They speak the language of numbers. They request bank records. They trace deposits and withdrawals. They chart obligations against intake. The picture forms quickly. There is no external revenue, no business activity generating profit, no investments producing returns. Money paid out comes directly from money taken in later. The structure depends entirely on continuous growth. From an investigative standpoint, the conclusion is clear. The program matches the definition of a Ponzi scheme. Returns are not produced, they are redistributed. Leadership resists this characterization. They insist God is the source. They argue regulators cannot measure divine provision. They say faith cannot be audited. Authorities continue anyway. Accounts are examined. The math does not bend. As scrutiny increases, incoming money slows. Word spreads beyond church circles. Media outlets begin asking questions. The ministry tells participants not to speak to reporters. They warn that outsiders seek to destroy faith. Delayed payments multiply. Calls go unanswered. Office doors close more often. Staff members are instructed to stick to scripts. Say nothing beyond prayer and patience. Some believers double down. They send more money. They believe another seed will unlock the delayed harvest. Others panic. They demand answers. A few threaten legal action. The atmosphere shifts. Services feel heavier. Testimonies disappear. Leaders preach about persecution. They frame investigation as proof the ministry is chosen. Opposition, they say, always comes before breakthrough. Behind closed doors, reality tightens. There's no way to satisfy existing obligations. Even full compliance from new donors would not cover what is owed. The numbers no longer balance. Regulators move closer. Freezing accounts becomes a possibility. Subpoenas are issued. Meetings with attorneys replace prayer sessions. Leadership insists publicly that everything is fine. Privately, control slips. The flow of money breaks unevenly. Some checks clear, others do not. Confusion spreads. Participants compare notes. They realize many are waiting at the same time. They realize explanations sound identical. Faith begins to fracture under shared doubt. Investigators finalize their conclusions. The promise is unsustainable. The structure violates financial laws regardless of religious framing. Intent does not erase outcome. As enforcement action looms, the system collapses inward. Growth stops, the machine starves. Without new money, nothing moves. What once felt like divine order now looks like chaos. Phones ring unanswered. Offices sit dark. Leaders disappear from view. Belief meets arithmetic head-on. Arithmetic does not yield. The question is no longer whether the promise can be kept. The question is how much damage has already been done. Chapter 3. The cost of believing. The collapse does not arrive with a single announcement. It happens in pieces. A bank account freezes. An office closes without notice. Phones stop being answered entirely. People who once spoke from pulpits vanish from view. For thousands of participants, the realization comes slowly, then all at once. The 17 months have passed. Nothing arrives. No explanation follows. What was framed as a spiritual delay now looks permanent. Regulators step in publicly. Civil actions are filed. Criminal charges follow. The language changes from faith to finance, from testimony to evidence. Courtrooms replace sanctuaries. The promise is no longer protected by scripture. It is measured in dollars. Investigators present the numbers clearly. Hundreds of millions flowed in. The exact total is difficult to pin down, but estimates land between $400 million and $500 million. Almost all of it came from individual believers. Almost none of it was ever recoverable. The structure is laid bare. Money paid to earlier participants came directly from later contributions. There was no profit engine, no investment vehicle, no divine multiplication, just redistribution until the flow stopped. In court, leaders face questions they never answered from the pulpit. Where was the money held? Who controlled it? How were decisions made? What guarantees were actually offered? Defenses lean heavily on belief. Leaders say they trusted God. They say they never intended harm. They say faith guided every decision. Prosecutors respond with ledgers, timelines, and bank records. Intent does not erase impact. The law does not recognize miracles as revenue. Promising returns, regardless of language, carries responsibility. Sentences are handed down. Prison time follows. Restitution orders are issued, though the money to satisfy them no longer exists. Assets are seized where possible. It is not enough. For victims, the damage is already done. Retirement plans are gone. Homes have been refinanced and lost. Savings meant for education or medical care vanished into the system. Some victims speak in court. Their voices are steady but strained. They describe the trust they placed in the ministry. They describe the shame of realizing they convinced others to join. They describe the silence that followed when questions became too loud. The financial loss is devastating. The spiritual damage cuts deeper. Many struggle with guilt. They blame themselves for believing. They question their judgment. Some question their faith entirely. Church communities fracture. Congregations split between those who warned and those who defended. Pastors face angry members, and not every victim walks away from belief. Some separate faith from the people who exploited it. Others cannot. Prayer feels dangerous now. Promises sound hollow. The broader religious world absorbs the shock. Ministries everywhere face increased scrutiny. Legitimate charities tighten language. Financial transparency becomes a necessity rather than an option. Donors ask harder questions. Regulators cite the case as a warning. Religious framing does not exempt financial conduct from law. Promises of return, regardless of wording, carry legal weight. The story spreads nationwide. It becomes a reference point in fraud training and church leadership seminars, a reminder of how easily trust can be converted into currency. Years later, the money does not return. A small fraction is recovered through asset sales. Most losses remain permanent. Time does not soften the numbers. What remains are lessons learned at a brutal cost. Faith is powerful. Trust is fragile. When belief replaces verification, the consequences can be catastrophic. For those who lived it, the story never fully ends. It surfaces every time a promise sounds too certain, every time someone says God guarantees a return. Faith survives for many, but the money does not, and the damage stays.